Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the Health Home Implementation Series Optimizing Practice Workflow Webinar. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question and answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You may also use the chat feature located in the lower left corner of your screen. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press the star followed by the 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Wednesday, March 7, 2012. I would now like to turn the conference over to Dr. Alan Silver. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Jacqueline Brinson, the New York State Department of Health, and NICE, I want to welcome you to this Health Home webinar. We appreciate your attendance. Today's webinar is focusing on issues in workflow with an emphasis on how it relates to helping individual practices participate in a health home integration program and how to assess work in an office as one implements health information technology and maximizes its use towards care coordination. So in a nutshell, we will do 3 or 4 elements here. We were going to review the background of the project, just to make sure that everyone is calibrated and on the same page, then spend a fair amount of time on looking at issues and processes related to workflow redesign, always with a focus in helping practices participate in maximal use of HIT for care coordination. And then we will give a couple of examples, one related to consent management and one related to referral workflow. So that's our objective here is, again, to focus on working with you to work with practices and have practices work with among themselves to understand what their current processes are, how to alter those processes to maximize information flow and care coordination as it relates to health home activities and primary care and specialty care. Just very briefly, just to remind so that we're on the same page, the context. This, we're talking within the construct of the New York State Medicaid Health Home Program, which, as folks know here, some programs and sites have already been selected and are moving towards being up and running. Others are in the selection process, and still other counties are moving towards applications fairly soon. So as we move through the implementation of this infrastructure, again, to remind that we're looking at care coordination activities with a particular focus on Medicaid beneficiaries who have high risk for issues related to disabilities, multiple chronic conditions, and or specific behavioral health issues, and that the focus of our activities is to maximize information flow and care plans and care coordination both within the sites and across the sites. So the ideal that we're looking for with the individual practice being here is to basically, to what degree in working as various stakeholders or participants can individual primary care sites connect through health information exchanges and qualified entities to coordinate care and maximize flow information across multiple domains. This is the goal. Our focus today is to mainly look at workflow within the practice site, typically primary care, but we do understand that this is really part of a larger activity that relates to integration among hospitals, other health facilities, long-term care, and specialty care. And with that in mind, we want to highlight to individuals that next week in New York City at the Roosevelt Hotel, as you can see on this slide, that there will be a meeting to review some of the core HIT needs for the care coordination activities as described or looked at in the previous slide. You can see in the slide below that there are 2 ways to access registration. One is directly through the New York eHealth Collaborative, and the other is by first going through the Medicaid Health Home site. Jacqueline?
Thanks, Alan. So the second part of this particular webinar, we're going to talk specifically about the goals of workflow redesign and how do we ensure organizations implement processes that can help them achieve the organization's goals. And to do that, we want to evaluate the existing workflows in an organization or strategically construct a process to meet the organization's goals. So workflow redesign is very important, whether it's a primary care facility or communication between facilities, because it aids in the implementation of efficiencies and consistency among staff and processes, and it also sets the foundation for future decision-making, whether it's selecting technology, training, or your implementation strategy overall. So to provide a fair understanding of the workflow redesign process, we're going to go through it step by step to make sure we understand the philosophy and the key tasks and activities that an organization should undertake. And we're going to apply the PDSA model to that workflow redesign activity. So analyzing the when, how, and why of doing things is so powerful. So in this workflow analysis, we're going to identify how information is documented, collected, and communicated between stakeholders. We're going to make sure we understand all of the players involved in a process. And these can be staff members that you may not traditionally think of as having a stake in an activity. So we're going to make sure we understand all of the people that need to be involved. We're going to visualize how the technology can support or inhibit achieving the optimal process you desire. And lastly, workflow analysis helps us identify redundancies, gaps, and complexity. So this activity will help us look at our current state and transition us to the future state where we want to be, or help us strategically think about what these activities should be if they do not exist already. And a tool or a process to help us go through our workflow is process modeling. Process modeling is a technique used to order activities in the appropriate sequence, aiding in the tracking of tasks and the deliverables in a process. It helps us describe how a process should take place, what actually happens, and it helps us look at things objectively. Sometimes when you're embedded in a process, we forget to look at it from an outsider's point of view or an objective point of view to make sure we're seeing everything that's involved in all the handoffs. Process modeling helps us prescribe how we want things to be performed and communicate those things to our stakeholders and staff. And lastly, it also helps us explain the links and requirements in the model and what the rationale is for doing things a certain way. So process modeling, there are so many tools that we can use to do that. We can use flow diagrams, we can use Visio, we can use Word or Excel, and you'll see a couple of those in this presentation. But that's not the only way to document a process. Lists or pen and paper type stick figures, whatever you need to clearly communicate the handoffs and who's involved are all fair game for process modeling. So before we move forward, we wanted to just spend some time going through some of the diagram elements that you're going to see throughout the presentation just to make sure everyone on the call is on the same page. So if you look at slide 10, we presented several different diagram elements, how you would identify an activity or how you would identify the flow of information, the concept of swim lanes and organizations and identifying who's responsible for a particular role or activity. And these things are important if you're using a traditional flow diagram to document your process. The other diagram element that's worth mentioning is the task, which is normally denoted in a flow diagram by a rectangular shape, and it specifically brings our attention to the activity that needs to be accomplished within that flow diagram. So if we think about these elements and look at the next slide, which is slide 12, we can see how these items demonstrate the flow of information. So what's important and different of the method you use to document your process is that you identify the key players, you track the flow of information, you're mindful of those key handoffs, and you identify how technology can support your process. So on slide 12, we just took a couple of basic processes that we think may be applicable to folks on the phone, how to flag somebody as being a part of a health home project and how to share information so we can see how we can really understand how the flow diagram helps us communicate what the processes are. So how do we document these processes for ourselves? And I think Alan's going to take over from here and walk us through that, at least the first steps.
So one way to look at this that may resonate with particularly with individuals, smaller practice site participants in your program, is to look at where are we now and where do we need to go through the lens of the quality improvement PDSA cycle, the Plan, Do, Study, Act. And from there, what we're trying to focus on is to get individuals in a suite or in a group of practices, if that may, is to understand what are the particular workflow tasks at hand, develop a plan using a team approach to implement it, and analyze what needs to be done to then implement and then assess where they are. So more specifically, plan, what is the workflow task at hand? Is it getting a consent to be in a health information exchange or qualified entity? Is it consultant handoffs, which are the examples we're going to go over in a couple of minutes? What is it? Who is responsible? Take the time. Help the practices understand it's worth taking the time to understand how do they do it now? What are they planning now and what are they doing now? And then from this process of understanding, and I'm hopefully this is going to go forward, which I'm having a trouble. Here we go. It's with a work team in hand, understanding the tasks that they wish to look at, the vision of they're doing, who the team members are, to then look at what they're doing, document the way the process is with an understanding of where it might be in the near future. Jacqueline?
So once the process is documented, we want to study that process. Are there key steps missing? Are there steps for compliance purposes that need to be interjected into the workflow process? Are there redundancies? Are different staff members performing the same exact tasks? Is data being documented in two different places in the system when we can consolidate to one entry? And then where can we be more efficient? Can we eliminate steps? Do we need to modify responsibilities of particular staff members? And how can we better leverage our technology to meet our needs? So after we've studied our process and gather all the inputs, we want to act on it. We want to document the new process. You also want to obtain buy-in from all your key stakeholders that you would have engaged in your team-building activity, and you want to implement your process. One thing that I have to mention that this slide diagram does not emphasize is that this is a cyclic process. You want to remember that once you implement a process, you want to learn from what works well. You want to maybe change things that do not work well. So your inputs from your implementation activity need to go back into the study component of this process. Reanalyze what doesn't work, fix it, and re-implement a new process that really makes sense for you. So since a lot of folks in the health home arena are working on a variety of different workflows, some folks are implementing technology, which is an EHR, some folks are implementing HIE connectivity, and some folks are trying to put it all together based on the current infrastructure. Here's just a roster of different workflows that you may want to think about and document effectively depending on where you are in your process of implementing technology. A couple of things to point out would be help desk workflow. We probably don't think about the process for submitting a ticket, who submits the ticket, who does the follow-up, who does the triage. That's going to be very important if you have new staff members using a piece of technology they may not have used before, or there are issues with getting things documented, resolved in an effective way. And we're going to spend some time within the next couple of slides talking about some other workflows. So we talked about the PDSA model, and I think it might be worthwhile to walk through that in more detail. So we're going to think about a consent management workflow process that a practice may want to implement in their day-to-day. So the ability to view information within a local exchange is predicated on the patient providing consent. I think we're all on the same page there. So how do we go about making sure that the process that we implement in our organization gets us to that end? So currently, a consent process may not exist if the practice is not connected to a RIO or not viewing a RIO portal. We may only be collecting HIPAA notices and not a RIO consent. Forms may be stored in a paper chart and not scanned into the system. So there are a lot of things that we may need to think about when we're looking at our current state if our desire is to be able to look at data in an exchange. So what we're going to do is we're going to plan. We're going to figure out exactly what's the question or problem we're going to solve. And for this example, we want to document and share our consent flag information so that our providers can look at information in the patient exchange. We're going to build the team. So who are the players that need to be involved in this process for this to really get planned out effectively for us? I might need my IT staff. We'll probably need somebody from registration if that's the place where we collect documents. Will the RIO need to be involved? The clinicians are looking for this, so I need to have some clinical leads a part of my team. So we're going to go ahead and build this strategic group to include all of the folks who have input into every step of this process. So once we build our team, we're going to do something about it. We're going to go ahead and document what our current process is and identify what are the new steps to accommodate this RIO consent. Identify all the roles who need to be educated on what this new value is or what this new process is. So that's training your front desk. That might be educating your IT folks. Could be a number of different things that you're going to need to do. Policies and procedures. If this is something new that we're doing, we may need to modify what those protocols are for our organization. And then lastly, we don't want to forget the patient. So how am I going to engage the patients in this conversation, and what are the best practices and methods we need to use in order to get the end result that we're looking for, which is an affirmative consent? Okay, so we have all of our inputs. So we're going to go ahead, and we're going to study this process. Are there gaps and inefficiencies and new requirements that we need to accommodate? Well, my front desk needs to collect informed consent. So how do we make sure that they're doing that appropriately? Do we have the right consent forms? Are there new forms that I need to be mindful of, and is the form that I have meeting our needs? Configuration. So there's going to be some system changes internally to account for that new value if it doesn't already exist in your systems today. How to manage changing in consent values. A patient can say yes, and they can also say no, and they can change their mind. So how are we going to manage that, and what are the values we need to include in our systems to accommodate those permutations? And lastly, if I'm going to get a consent management process on board in my organization, it's maybe the whole organization, even though a component of it may not be participating in the Health Home project, but you want to implement a process that makes sense for everybody. So do I have minors and other folks who may have different ways of consenting? A parent can consent on behalf of a minor. Do I need to do things differently for that population? So I've analyzed my inputs. I've documented the process. I know who needs to be involved. We're going to act on this process. So we're going to define exactly what this workflow needs to look like for our organization, and we're going to implement that process such that we're collecting consent appropriately, we're documenting those values, our IT departments are engaged, our RIOs are engaged, and we're transmitting those affirmative consent values to the appropriate exchange. And then once we do that, we're going to revisit this process to make sure that it's working for us. And if it's not working for us, we're going to study why it's not working for us and implement changes. So if we think through this consent management model, there are a number of ways organizations can do this based on what works for them. So on slide 24, there is an example from the perspective of the front desk as to how this may work for an organization. We can, when the patient comes in, we can look at our system to see if consent was already collected. If it was, great, we can continue with our registration process. If not, we want to educate the patient that this may be something they want to consent to allow the providers to effectively collect information, view information that can impact their care. The patient's going to return the form. Did they say yes? And if they say yes, where do I need to document that affirmative consent value? And if they say no, where do I need to make those indicators as well? And then what happens to the signed form? Does it get labeled? Does it get triaged with all the other documents? How do we manage those processes? So as we think about consent management, there are a couple of other things you need to be mindful of. What's the timing? How long does it take from the change of the flag in my system, my local system, to get transmitted to the RIO if you have clinicians who are looking for access right away? How does that impact your workflow and the expectations? Can the provider collect consent? And if so, do we need to document what that flow of information needs to be if the provider is going to go ahead and have that conversation with the patient? And if so, they collect the form. How does that form get to the right place so the flag gets in our system the right way? Minor consent. When a minor becomes an adult, do I need to do something different? If the parent said yes, do I need to educate the minor and now change their consent value based on their own decisions? And then lastly, you don't want to annoy the patient by constantly asking them a question all the time, the same question. So do I need to have more than a yes-no value for my consent field? Maybe it's ask next visit. Maybe it's never ask this patient again. Or maybe the process is that once you get the patient at registration, we check the system first to see if the question has been asked so we can manage the expectations of the patient.
The next example that we're going to give is looking at it from a slightly different frame of reference, but the same basic questions. What is involved? What are we doing now? Where do we want to get to? And the example that we have picked is one that we believe is particularly appropriate for care coordination referral workflow. So what you see before you is an example of this being done via swim lanes, which Jacqueline referred to earlier, and that this layout of this process has a linear flow to it and separates between providers, support staff, and other ancillary activities related to the process. By the way, this is one of several existing workflows that are at the New York eHealth Collaborative website. If you go to that website and click under Resources and Tools, you will find several other workflows that have been initially laid out by a group of stakeholders last year under the guidance of the New York State Department of Health, Office of Health Information Technology and Transformation. So this example basically, as you can see here, starts with, all right, so what is our process? There's a desire by a primary care clinician to make a social work referral or to another behavioral specialist or to a more traditional medical subspecialist. What happens now and where do we go from here? What are the issues that relate to the patient in terms of identification? Is an EHR used now, or is there, in fact, a paper version that's going to need to change in the future if there's some sort of consultation template or form? What are the data elements that are required to fill out the appropriate consultation? What needs to be attached or summarized? And then how does that process go from the clinician interacting with the patient to the appointment actually getting made? And then the follow-up being occurring of that appointment. So I'm going to hone in on one of them just a bit. And that is the part where we're saying that we need to give information to the new consultant. How is that done now? What is the current state of practice? Is the front desk phone? Is the physician or other clinician, a PA or NP phone? Is there faxed? Do they do multiple? Do they use independent secure email to send the message? Is the practice part of a particular vendor that has its own mini hub where everyone using that EHR can exchange information? This is particularly of interest, at least in our example, for groups that are multiple sites, or groups that are part of, for example, independent practice associations or RIOs that buy a series of licenses and then have an internal hub created through that single vendor that can connect to other qualified entities later? Do they go through a RIO exchange? Is there a common continuity of care document? Or is it done multiple ways? Again, the issue, as is, to be, where are you now? Where do you need to get to in the future? These are some examples of that output that you can see here. One is an example that I took from some materials from Hixney in the Capital Region that talks about the use of a Healthy Talk guide to create a summary form, a variation of a continuity of care document specifically related to referral. And the example is that it goes through that platform from multiple sources. Another one is an example that we use at iPro, though we're not a clinical provider, but we submit data back and forth that has PHI on it, protected health information, through a secure email channel. So this would be an example if I was referring to a patient, less robust than this one, of course, because I'm simply giving a summary and then summarizing on a PDF the pertinent activities and sending it to the consultant by a secure email. The question is, ongoing basis, where are we now? Where are you going to? How do you want to get there? With a particular emphasis on trying to make sure that the practice understands, particularly the small office, that this kind of activity is worth the effort, and it's also worth understanding where you want to be at the end of the process so that your workflows and your output will easily sync into the larger care coordination sponsor who requires data and an integrated care plan that can be viewed by key stakeholders. Jacqueline?
So in conclusion, workflow analysis using some type of process model is an efficient way to document what your current process is, such that you're tracking the information flow between your stakeholders and technology. And the PDSA model is a framework that can guide that effective workflow redesign process, whether it's primary care, between two organizations. It's the Deming model, which has been used in business for a very long time, and it's very helpful, and we hope that this presentation on it and the two workflows we've dove into in some depth was meaningful. So lastly, just some best practices as folks begin to think about how they're going to communicate in the health home. Use consistent tools to analyze your current state. When you have the framework down, it's really easy to reuse and go back to other areas of your process that you may need to revisit. Gather input from everyone. Don't just look at the management or the manual that has the way we thought it was going to be. Processes change over time. People adopt their own specific way to do tasks, so you want to make sure you include all of the stakeholders relevant to that task to capture exactly what's being done. Planning. It is so critical that you plan this activity against all of the other competing priorities so that you're making the best use of your resources and you can objectively capture the information you need in order to effectively redesign your process if necessary. Change. Change is not easy. It's not easy for anyone, but you need to be willing to do so and trust that your guys are going to map out wonderful processes for your organization. So change management is a very critical task or critical component that folks need to be conscious of. Assign a champion to the project. I know for EHR implementations, they are very successful when there is a clinical champion that's leading the charge, and I'm quite sure that in most other implementations, this fact probably also holds true. So please make sure you have a champion that's pushing your project along. And lastly, robust functionality, whether you're choosing your EHR or other piece of technology to round out your project, that is going to include the features that you need to sustain yourself today and then tomorrow. So at this time, we would like to open the phone lines for any questions. Operator?
I'd like to interject first for a second, though, just to let people know when you get these slides that Jacqueline did put together a longer set, and I'm just clicking on an example here, a longer set of appendices on how to map workflow and how to do workflow task modeling. sorry about that, Jacqueline, but I don't know that people know that this will be there, so I wanted to highlight the work that you did.
Sure, thank you.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. One moment, please, for the first question.
So while we wait for folks to queue up a question, whether it's via the phone lines or the chat, the slide deck will be made available on the Medicaid website in the Health Home section. So if you go to the Medicaid website and go to Partner Resources, there is a section for the implementation of Health Homes, the HIT Adoption Training Series. The slide deck, as well as all the other slide decks, will be made available there.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder on the phone lines, if you wish to ask a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. And there seems to be no questions at this time.
Well, we want to thank you for taking the time to attend this session. We hope that the templates that are available in this slide deck and on the NICE website will be helpful to you in performing workflow modeling for practices who are participating in the Medicaid Health Home Project. Thank you.
And then on your screen, please note that Christine Strobel from the Primary Care Information Project will facilitate the next webinar session on patient-centered medical home and meaningful use, Wednesday, March 27th at 2:30. The registration link is available in the slide deck as well as on the page we described on the Medicaid Health Home section. And a reminder will probably go out to all of the lead health home applicants a couple days or a week or so before the session. Well, thanks, everyone, for your time. Have a wonderful day.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the webinar for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.